Do you know what time it is? It's supernatural story time. And if you're easily scared, and even if you're not, there's only one thing left to do. Just turn off the lights, because these are stories that you listen to only in the dark. Stories to Make You Shiver, Volume 3, Story 1. I went to college at Virginia Tech 30 years ago. Southwest Virginia is a beautiful part of the country, and I spent a ton of time hiking, camping, hunting, etc. in Virginia, West Virginia, and North Carolina. There is a hike called the Cascades that is moderate at worst, takes you to a 70-foot waterfall and scenic pool. Fairly easy hike that takes maybe 4 hours out and back. A little trickier in winter with ice, but the frozen falls are gorgeous. Did it many times and then found out that if you got to the big falls, climbed up, not that hard, and continued past them, you would be able to see another smaller waterfall or two, a fire tower, and some other neat stuff. Researching further, which was much harder in the pre-internet days, there was another fire tower about an 8-hour hike further that was still standing. Me and a buddy decided to take a spring break and go hiking and camping rather than going home. We started early the first day of break and made it to the remote fire tower by dark, barely. It was in decent enough shape to stay in, with some scrambling to get around a missing section of ladder from what I remember. On the way there, we wandered through a camouflage bootlegging setup, multiple stills, fairly big setup. There are old fire roads back there, but I think these particular purveyors of homemade whiskey probably carted the equipment at least partway from some nearby wood fire road, since we saw nothing allowing a vehicle up there. This part of Virginia has a long, long tradition of non-regulated production of liquor. There was an old guy on the street I lived on in Blacksburg, a retired coal miner who had a still set up behind a false wall in his workshop. We'd shovel the driveway of snow sometimes and he'd give us moonshine in return. Fair deal. My buddy was poking around a lot before I told him we needed to leave. Just felt creepy, and this setup was obviously used regularly given the number of stills, extensive camouflage netting, and you could tell the moonshiners pitched camp there not long ago. We got to the fire tower and spent a few days and decided to trek back to the trailhead and home. Being that far in the mountains is interesting. We slept up in the fire tower, but had to go down to make fire, boil water, cook, etc. First night is funny. You'd hear sounds like big and probably rabbit-sized in reality. By the third night, nothing sounded big like it did at first. We had enough food, shot a couple of rabbits to eat as well, passed on a few deers, as A, we could not possibly have eaten that much venison, and B, I only had a .22 rifle and my buddy a .38 special revolver. Odd choice for the woods, not exactly deer hunting weapons. So we're hiking out, still having a good time, and the route takes us back through moonshine heaven. And to me, it looked different this time. Things had been moved around, somewhat recent footprints in the dirt, etc. We kept moving, and it just felt odd to me. At this point, the creek that leads to the waterfall, and eventually the trailhead, starts to carve a little canyon into the ground. We're probably 4 hours from the main falls, and then 2 hours from there to the trailhead. We're walking along one side of the creek and stopped to drink some water. I happened to look back, and way in the distance, someone was following us, visible at times on the far side of the creek. I pointed this out to my buddy, and we picked up the pace until we hit a spot at the end of a long, long, straight section of trail. Our stalker came into view at a distance, and you could see he was carrying a rifle, not a .22 like I had, but something big enough to take down a deer easily. He finally saw us, and probably the .22 I had, and he slowly climbed the hill on the opposite back and got over the top of the ridge. By now I'm spooked, figured it's one of the moonshiners. They had noticed our presence at their setup on our way into the woods. We continued heading onward at a good clip, but scanning the ridge on the other side to see if we could spot our friend. It was nerve-wracking. We were maybe 1 hour from the falls when he took 2 shots at us that missed by a good 10 feet, but came from a ways off. I fired a few rounds in the direction the shots came from, and we started sprinting with packs on for a while. Left the trail, climbed over a ridge, and found some boulders and rocks to hide out in. It was getting dark, so we spent the night crouched down listening for our stalker. No fire, and taking 2 hour shifts staying up in the night while the other attempted to sleep. You can imagine just about any noise is someone creeping up on you. the wind, animals, anything. As soon as it started getting light out, we crept along the ridge overland and only came back to the trail at the falls. At the bottom, we tightened the belt on our packs and jogged, or well, ran back to the trailhead. I may have spied a stalker on the way out, but couldn't be sure. We threw our stuff in the car, which started first crank, thankfully, and got out of there. Story number two. There used to be a logging that my wife, back when she was my new girlfriend, would head up when the sun went down. We would walk into a clear cut on a hill that overlooked the town, find a log to sit on and fool around for hours under the stars. Not a worry whatsoever. Timber company eventually gated it off, but walking in was still allowed. Fast forward a few years and I would take my son there with me while hunting and my nieces and nephews hiking. I visited this spot a lot. One day, I go back in there, rifle on my shoulder, got to a certain spot, and the hair on my neck stood up. It was like I ran into a brick wall. I could go no further. I dared not try because I knew that taking a few more steps meant an encounter with something terrifying, perhaps even evil. It was a long mile back to the truck, and I did it while looking over my shoulder the whole time, on the verge of panic. A few weeks later, I thought maybe I overreacted and decided to go back because it's a good deer hunting area. I got to that same spot and it was the exact same feeling again. Again, I made the long walk back, constantly looking behind me. My once favorite spot now terrified me. I quit going there. A few years go by and my neighbor wants to hunt after work. He suggests the same spot. I figure there's two of us with rifles. We can handle anything that comes our way, so why not? Started walking in and get to a point where he suggests we split up. I'm a little uneasy, but agree. He heads up the road towards the wall, and I start walking a game trail through the timber. I made it about 200 yards down the trail, and everything inside of me is screaming at me to turn around. I do so, got to the road, and there's my neighbor who, after only 20 minutes or so, is also heading back to the truck. Whatever is up there spooked him also. That was about 4 years ago. I haven't been back there since, and I never will. Story number three. My dad was career U.S. Air Force. To 25 years, he retired and moved back to my mom's hometown in Central North Carolina. My dad was always active and walked every day to stay in shape, whether we were stationed near the beach or forest. He would walk for miles, picking up trash or visiting neighbors. We moved to a rural area, but close enough to get to town in 15 minutes. The area had just not been developed much, and there were high power lines crisscrossing the area. My dad would walk along these clear-cut areas until he had a very bad experience. My dad didn't scare easy, but whatever he saw that day scared him and filled him with fear. This particular day was in late August, early September, so it was still light after he got home from work. The man worked until he was 65. And after dinner, he decided to walk along the power lines, something he had done for several years. He would always tell us on which direction he was going. He had been gone for about 90 minutes when he came back looking as white as a sheet and very agitated. He told me and my sisters that he didn't want us to walk along the power lines anymore and would prefer that we didn't go beyond a certain point, about a quarter mile. Knowing him so well, we didn't dare question him about it. Sometime in the next day or so, he told us what he had seen. He had walked to where the power line crossed a major highway, as usual, and was walking back. He said the entire walk back, he felt like he was being watched. We called it his spidey sense. This area was and is all piney woods and no houses whatsoever. At this time, he still smoked cigarettes, and he stopped to light one up and turned around to block the wind. When he did this, he looked into the woods, and there was a dark, black shadow figure at about 50 yards in the woods staring at him. This shadow figure had red eyes and when it snarled at him, yellow fangs. My dad said he felt evil fill the air and was terrified. My dad always wore a gold cross on a chain that his mother had given him many, many years ago for protection. My dad put his hand on the cross and kept it there while he walked home. He said the shadow figure followed him but never came out of the woods and never got any closer. When he got to within a quarter mile of the house, the shadow figure dissipated and vanished. The air felt safe again. My dad didn't scare easily. He was a Korean and Vietnam veteran and flew reconnaissance flights over enemy territory. But whatever he saw that evening terrified him. He never walked that way again. There were two ponds on the property, and while we were always comfortable at the pond close to the front of the house, none of us really liked to go to the other smaller pond, which was close to the woods where Dad saw the shadow figure. He never saw the shadow man again, and he always felt like he wasn't supposed to see it when he did, but did so by accident. About 30 years ago, the property was sold to a developer, a large church was built, and an apartment complex. Part of the land is still undeveloped because it belongs to the utility company. I still have no urge to go walking along the cleared area. Next story. This happened back in 2018 on an Easter Sunday. On the way home from my parents around 4 p.m. or a little after, I was with my sister and we were driving west on the beltway between Highway 90 and the Westlake Houston Parkway traffic lights. There are a couple of lights in between 90 and the WLHP. Can't remember the names of them, Tidwell and something else. Anyway, we passed the first traffic light and we're approaching the next one. There's a woman sitting on the curb with her legs and feet out in the right lane, just sitting there. She was wearing shorts, a tank top, no shoes, and had a backpack type thing laying on the grass beside her, and she was looking at her smartphone. But what got me and my sister's attention when we pulled up to the stoplight and stopped was her face. I hate to say this with hesitation, but this is what I saw. Where her eyes should have been were two black spots. Her cheeks were not just sunken a little, they were sunken way in. You could clearly not just see her cheekbones, but the zygomatic process as you can on the severely starved or mummified. Her upper teeth were visible as if she had no upper lip at all. You could see the arch of her upper teeth for far past where a smile would have exposed them. And her entire head appeared significantly smaller than it should have been, and the flesh was an ochre yellow and pulled quite tight and smooth, while the rest of her arms and legs seemed normally colored for a white woman. She looked quite literally as if she was already dead. And it was not deformity or burns from a fire or anything like that. And her head was too small, almost childlike. I was in the passenger side, my sister was driving, and the girl was less than 5 feet from my window. I got a good look at her for about 2 minutes. In no time did she look up from her phone, and she didn't move except for one hand doing something on the screen of her phone. She was not wearing makeup. She had no eyes, unless there was some way to completely cover them with something, which I don't know how. My sister gasped but said nothing, and I said nothing for quite a way. Finally, my sister said, "Did you see that?" in a very quiet tone, and I said, "Yes." We didn't need to say anything else. We both knew what we saw. We didn't feel anything in particular emanating from the woman. Didn't notice anything else that looked or felt strange. Just her sitting there. We haven't told anyone other than telling her husband. I haven't even told my best friends or even my mother. It's too unreal for me. As it is, I've still been trying to formulate an identity for what we saw so long ago. Next story. I had an odd experience when driving across the North York Moors a few years ago. My wife and I were visiting a friend's holiday home for the weekend, but due to pressure of work, we weren't able to leave until late in the evening. We reached the moors about 1:30 a.m. For England, the area is pretty lonely and traffic is non-existent at that time of night. There are few roads and very little around, just woodlands, open moorland, farms, and the odd village. Obviously, no street lighting, so it's almost pitch black with a vague glow from Teesside on the northern horizon. All of a sudden, we caught sight of a tall black figure walking towards us on the road. We had been doing about 40 miles per hour, so I slowed right down to 15 or 20 as we approached it, but I couldn't quite take in what I was seeing. The best description I can give is the Dark Riders from the Lord of the Rings films. It was dressed entirely in a long black robe that covered its face. Just as we were passing, it stopped, turned to face the car, and then started walking towards us. It gives me the creeps, and I wasn't going to wait around to find out what it wanted, so I put my foot down and got out of there sharpish. If anyone had told me it was Death himself, I would have believed them. It later occurred to me that Whitby, over on the coast, has a goth scene, apparently, because Bram Stoker set part of Dracula in the town, and they like moping around the ruined abbey. Having said that, Whitby was over 20 miles away, so it's quite a hike over the moors, and Goths always struck me as fairly inoffensive lot. What we saw exuded an air of malice, whatever it was. Next story. Growing up, my parents sent me to church camp every summer. It was an overnight camp that lasted from 7 to 10 days. My dad is a preacher, and he was also a counselor at the camp all the years I was there. It was a pretty good-sized camp, and about 300 or so kids came every summer. It was at a rented campground, and we did normal summer camp-type stuff during the day and had chapel every evening. Most chapels ended with an altar call, and with all the praying, music, singing, it was quite loud at times. It was midweek, and we had finished the sermon, and the altar call was in full swing. My friends and I were hanging back, sort of chatting. The buildings where chapel was held was quite large. Not a dedicated church per se, but a very large building that was only about half filled with all 300 campers and 35 or so counselors and staff. As we're chatting in the back, all of a sudden, we heard very loud, deep screaming. So loud that it cut through all the music and noise. I have been through hundreds of chapels over my years as a camper, and this screaming was unlike anything I had ever heard before, with so much noise. It was impossible to hear a single voice speak out and be heard clearly except for this one. In fact, the evangelist who was leading chapel needed a mic and PA system, and we could barely hear him during altar call. But this person was clear as a bell. The screaming continued for quite a while, and my friends and I had no idea what was happening. We were probably around 14 at the time. It was so unnatural that we were definitely unnerved. The whole vibe of the place changed. I know that's an overused cliche, but nothing else seems to fit. The whole atmosphere seemed heavy. We noticed that most of the counselors, many of whom were pastors, had gathered at the altar, and all the campers were giving them plenty of space. The screaming continued. After a while, our counselor came back and explained what was happening. He said that a group of the cooks from the campground had been invited to church that night, and one of them accepted the altar call and immediately began screaming and thrashing about. It turned out he was demon-possessed. The group of pastors had gathered around and were delivering him from the unclean spirit. Our counselor came back and began to pray and plead the blood of Christ over us. He said that when the demon was cast out, it would look for a new home. The ordeal seemed to take a very long time, but in reality, I'm sure it was no more than an hour or two. It was very scary and unnerving. People can profess disbelief in angels, demons, and possession, but I think they would change their minds if they experienced it firsthand. It was a very unnatural thing that was screaming from that young man's mouth. He was delivered that night and continued to attend chapel for the rest of the week. Being a teenager, I never heard about his life or how he turned out long term. But the experience has never left me, though it happened over 25 years ago. It was real and very frightening. I will never forget it. Next story. It was probably the year 2000. I was hiking with a select group of Boy Scouts in my troop. The adult leadership would select people who were apparently devoted to scouting for some of the more adventurous outings. We were hiking the White Mountains of New Hampshire. A long way into the mountains, one of the boys fell and broke his wrist. We were not prepared to camp out. We had a strict schedule to follow where we were staying in the AMC huts along our journey. Due to the injury, we were essentially stranded on the side of the trail while the adults determined what medical attention was necessary. Without cell phone service, we were informed to build a camp off the side of the trail. The rest of the scouts would stay there for the night while two adults would bring the injured youth to the trailhead and wait for assistance. We were carrying all of our food on our backs and had no tents or other supplies to make a legitimate camp. We laid out our sleeping mats and bags, and then we were instructed to make a stretcher to aid in carrying down the injured hiker. I now realized that making a stretcher was a ploy to keep us occupied. We scoured the area for something to make a stretcher and only found a few limbs on the ground. Once our makeshift stretcher was completed, I elected to try it out. After the other boys lifted me literally a few inches off the ground, I fell. The support system had fractured. The injured boy and two of the three adults then hobbled down the trail to seek medical attention. At this point, I became worried because I knew we were hauling a ton of food in our packs, and we did not have the capabilities to hang a proper bear bag, and we would be sleeping under the stars. We fell asleep early that night, right after sundown. This was just after the 4th of July, as we had made our way up Tuckerman's Ravine on the 4th. A little after midnight, I woke up to a soft touch on my face. We were buddy sleeping at the time. Each scout had a buddy sleeping directly next to them. I remember being paranoid that something was out there. In essence, I was freaked out and scared. I tapped on my buddy to wake him up. As he awoke, he started smacking at his face as well. Something was definitely out there, tickling our faces, so to speak. Now, both awake, we were trying to figure out what was touching us. Shining a flashlight on the cached food, we had it appeared untouched, and then Wings of Fury unleashed upon the beam of light. Apparently, the local population of moths had took an interest in our camp and had been fluttering around. We named the sizable moth that kept hitting our faces Mothzilla. It was a rather large moth, with no other desire than to land on our face and flutter. Being a 17-year-old kid at the time that was not prepared for what we were doing, I was scared out of my mind. Now, another story was when I was working at a local Boy Scout camp. This didn't happen to me, but I witnessed the aftermath. We always advise scouts at the camp not to bring food, sweets, etc. to bed. Most heed this warning, others do not. It was midweek in July. We were a few weeks into the Boy Scout summer camp season. Most of the troop sites were meant for canvas-walled tents. However, there was one site with lean-tos. The situation took place in a lean-to. There are four bunks to each lean-to, bunk bed style. A scout on the upper bunk had decided to take his haul of candies and chocolate bars to the upper bunk of the lean-to. Sometime after lights out, a skunk must have smelled the residual odor of sweets emanating from the top bunk. Now, the skunks in this particular camp don't have any fear of humans. Many times, I would be eating Chinese food from a local establishment that was picked up during my off hours in the woods. I was a wilderness survival instructor, so much of my off time was spent not in camp. Well, this unfortunate scout was sound asleep when a skunk had made its way into the top bunk and literally sat on his chest. Eventually, the scout woke up and naturally freaked out. Rather than let out a scream, he let out a stream of urine, which subsequently started to drip onto the scout on the bottom bunk. This woke the bottom bunk kid up. Realizing what was happening, he gave a sturdy kick to the underside of the top bunk. Now, these bunks were spring-framed, so a significant amount of sagging was occurring depending on the weight of the individual. With a sturdy kick, the upper bunk jumped, which in turn shot the skunk off his secure footing. As you can imagine, the result was a spray of the stinky kind, which lingered in the area for days. Everything in that lean-to was doused in skunk musk. Next story. These are a couple of my stories. The first one is, I went to Pawtuckaway State Park in New Hampshire. I had read that there's a collapsed caldera of an ancient volcano there, so I was curious to have a look. I went with my son, who was, I think, 7 at the time. As with a lot of the stories, we got to a certain point, and I had this feeling like we were being watched or something. At the same time, I had this feeling my son all of a sudden says he didn't want to be there anymore. We walked back, but without a problem. But I was constantly scanning, looking around to see if there was anything around. I even did a 360-degree turn, trying to see anything. Never had that feeling before, and I've asked around, but no one seems to have reported a similar experience at that spot. Now, this is another story. It's back in the early 2000s, and I worked second shift. I came home from work one night in the summer, and it was hot, so I had all the windows open. I was accustomed to staying up late and sleeping in late till I had to go back to work. The place I was living at had a little barn for a few sheep and chickens behind the house. Anytime the sheep heard anyone, they would start baaing, looking for something to eat. This barn was right in the edge of some woods and swamp that extended maybe a mile back into the next road. So I was up doing something on the computer. It was maybe 1 or 2. And all of a sudden, I hear this scream. And I thought, for all the world, that it was a woman being murdered in the backyard, like right behind the house. All I could think of was maybe somehow someone had been chased into the backyard and was now getting killed right at this moment. It sounded exactly like what you would expect to hear from a woman being murdered. I jumped up to get the phone to call the police, but before I get to the phone, I heard the exact same scream over again. So I realized it must be some kind of animal, because a person would not just make the exact same noise again like that. Then I heard it one more time right after that. For some reason at this point, I foolishly thought I had to go out and see what it was, in case it was going after the sheep or the chickens. At the time, I didn't have a gun, so I had a tomahawk and a flashlight. I went outside and it was just like a movie. There's this thick fog. So even though I was using a flashlight, I couldn't see anything. Typically, the sound of the back door closing would get the sheep going, but they were dead silent. Instead, when the door closed and I had the light going, I could hear something take off running across the backyard. It had apparently been closer to the house than the barn, which would explain why it was so loud. I actually realize now that it must have been quite close to me when I went out the door. I heard it go crashing up through the woods. I could kind of follow its path with my ears. After it seemed to have left, I went up and checked on the animals, which were all fine. I looked in the morning, but the land wasn't anything that would show prints. No idea what it was. Some people have suggested a mountain lion. But even then, I'm not sure. I don't think so. Now, this is another story. This happened maybe 4 years ago. I went with my family to this place called the Great Bay National Wildlife Refuge, which is in Newington, New Hampshire, just to have a look around. I went in the winter, maybe around January or so, and there's a raised boardwalk that goes through the woods. So I went there with my wife and my 4-year-old son and our baby. When we get there, we discovered that apparently the government doesn't have enough money to shovel off the boardwalk in the winter, but we were already there, so we wanted to have a look around. The boardwalk was covered with at least 6 inches of snow. There was probably 6 to 8 inches of snow on the ground to either side of the boardwalk. Most of the trees had kind of a little well around them where the snow was less deep. This is from the branches keeping the snow from falling straight down there, I suppose. Some of the trees had a bit of bare ground right around the trunks. After about 2 minutes, we also discovered that this wildlife refuge is literally at the end of an airport runway. I observed that it must be a refuge for deaf animals, but again, we were there, so we wanted to have a look around. The raised boardwalk zigzags through the woods a little bit, so there are some spots where you can't see other parts of the boardwalk due to intervening trees. So my wife was behind me with a baby, and my son was running off ahead. At one point, I stopped to wait for my wife to catch up, and my son got out of sight for a minute up ahead. I was calling for him, and he came back. He said that up ahead he had met a man with a basket of candy around his neck. He told my son to reach in and take some. He said he told the man he wasn't allowed to do that, and he had to check with his parents. So here I am running my hand through my hair thinking, you can't even go for a nice family walk without some pedophile turning up nowadays. So I had him come along and show me this guy. We went along this boardwalk, came to a certain spot. My son was telling me that this is where he saw the guy. But the way he was pointing was, if he was indicating someone very small, he was pointing down from the raised boardwalk, as if the person was lower than he was. So he was 4 years old, plus the height of the boardwalks was maybe 12 or 18 inches above the ground. So he seemed like he must be indicating someone maybe 3 or 4 feet tall at the most. He was pointing into one of these kind of wells around a tree trunk. There was no sign of any footprints or anything that I could see. So I went all the way up to the end of the path and back and couldn't find anything. I was supposed that there was anyone there, they must have run off towards the airport. I didn't just discount his story because we actually had never talked to him about taking candy from strangers or anything. So I didn't think it would be likely to form the basis of a made-up story for him. So we got back in the car, and I was asking him to be more descriptive about what this guy looked like. And he was saying he had black hair. Then he was kind of struggling to describe his color. He said his skin was like metal, like the color of a quarter. He seemed like he was looking for the color gray and just couldn't quite come up with that word. So my wife and I looked at each other like, oh, he must be fooling. But I kept thinking about that as time went by because it just didn't seem like something he would make up. So a few months later, just for fun, I typed a description into Google just to see what would come up. I put in something like 3 feet tall, black hair, gray skin, maybe in the woods or something. And one of the things that came up was something called a pugwudgie. It is said that there were some kind of little people that used to be friendly with the Indians around this way. But subsequently, they had some kind of falling out and the pugwudgies became kind of the enemies of the Indians and would do bad things to them if given the opportunity. More recently, I read that they are supposedly still friendly with the Anishinaabe further west of here. So I was reading some articles about them, and it said that they were very short with black hair and gray skin. I was like, holy shit. So I Googled some pics and mixed them with some other stuff and showed them to my son without saying anything. He immediately pointed to the one of the Pukwudgie drawings and said, "That's the guy I saw." I was like, whoa. So, of course, I've never gone within a mile of that place since.